Dom, did you just put like some royalty-free grunge music on Canuck Central? Dom is still mad that I sent Elliot Friedman a note that he needs to chirp Dom for putting Creed in the spot where he mentioned Seattle grunge music in the 90s.
Did you?
I did.
You did. So it was you.
It was me.
It was you.
But it wasn't only me. There was dozens of us.
Yeah. You can fade this out now.
This sounds like some really bad Nirvana wannabe track.
Yeah. For a second, I'm like, wait, is this Come As You Are? What is going on? Like, wait, no.
It's Come As You Were.
Yes. This ain't it. Moving on. Please and thank you. So Canucks will have the Boston Bruins today, and that is where we're going to be focusing coming up after 3 o'clock when we get into the full pregame, get into some of the lineup notes, Brock Besser returning, and more. This hour of Canuck Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Now we are expecting Colby Armstrong to join us here on the program covering the Pittsburgh Penguins, and hopefully we can connect with him here in a moment. But the Penguins are on the docket for tomorrow.
Yeah, they are. And I mean, they made the trade to acquire Phil Tomasino yesterday for a 4th-round pick. And he's a player who has put up good numbers in the AHL and has looked to be a promising young centerman. And for a team that needs centers with the Preds, surprising that, you know, they traded him in that regard. But anytime this happens, we always see this big reaction of what the hell is this team doing? This guy is so talented. And usually it's not a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when a prospect switches teams like this, usually it's not a good sign. How often does that work out? Now, it does work out from time to time. There are teams that mess up development, and there are players who mature and get better and just, you know, take steps in their development. That does happen. But it's usually not a great sign.
Yeah.
So when I see stuff like, oh, Tomasino for a 4th is a steal, I'm like, let's see what happens here first. But he's a player that I've always liked.
Yeah.
You know?
It's essentially almost nothing, right? Like the trade value is a 2027 4th-round pick for a 23-year-old who was drafted in the first round a few years ago. You know, he wasn't getting the playing time he wanted in Nashville, so was there more there? Was Pittsburgh the first to jump on it? There's a lot, but, you know, we've seen this story before. It's funny because I can remember when the report came out and Jim Rutherford talked about it, like getting guys that were high draft picks, maybe hadn't hit in their current situations, need a change of scenery. And just the idea of Jim Rutherford mentioning that publicly in a Canucks news conference got people up in arms like, these players never work out. And then at the same time, you know, when they see it happen elsewhere, it's like, oh, I would have taken a chance on that guy for a 4th-round pick.
yeah, for sure. Well, I think it's
so. I don't know which side of the fence are you playing. You're on both sides. You can't be that way.
No, you're right, and I think there is a lot of speaking out of both sides of your mouth, right?
Yeah.
And that does happen quite often. And to be fair, like, you know, fans do react emotionally really quickly as well. But I would say it's a lot different too when you look at it from, if you're a team that's trying to find long-term fits, then if that's what you're trying to do and rebuild on the fly, it's like, okay, that's, we saw it happen here in the past. And I think there was PTSD from, you know, the Canucks flipping Shinkarik, Hunter Shinkarik for Granlund, for instance, right? And you know, obviously Granlund ended up being a better NHL player because Shinkarik never made it anywhere. But right. But fans hated that idea of, you know, trading or giving up value for somebody who's only going to be, you know, a fourth line contributor for you or something like that, right? But now you're looking at it from, this team is talented. It's more of a on the contending side than a team that's rebuilding. So if you're looking to get cheap bets, is a player like him worth giving up the draft pick to try to make it work? And honestly, considering where the Canucks are, I'm not sure I'm giving up 4th-round picks for Flyers. That might just be tweener guys for you anyways.
They probably need those 4th-round picks to maybe look at getting somebody closer to the deadline that can help their depth heading into a playoff run.
Yeah, and I think...
Which is probably like a veteran that's not all that exciting, but, you know, they can potentially step in a big spot come playoff time.
Well, we saw last year at the trade deadline where if you had a little bit of cap space, you could have got guys for very cheap.
Oh, Jason Zucker.
Yeah.
Right? Went for absolutely nothing.
Nothing. It was like a seventh round pick or whatever it was, or was it a fifth or something.
It was just take all the money and you can have them.
Yeah. Essentially what happened, right? And there are other guys that you could have had that teams just couldn't trade for because there was no cap space. There were teams willing to just get off the money, essentially. Even if it's saving a few hundred thousand, it's still better than nothing for a team that's not going anywhere.
Now, with the Penguins on the docket tomorrow, look, almost no need in beating a dead horse, but the Penguins have been really bad. 7-12-4 on the year. They've given up. This is probably the craziest thing about it, and it highlights how it's not just bad goaltending for the Pittsburgh Penguins, but they've given up 93 goals in 23 games. The next closest team is the San Jose Sharks, who've given up 85 goals in 24 games. So it's pretty remarkable how, and we saw it in the game here in Vancouver, how quickly things can unravel defensively for the Penguins when the Canucks scored, three goals in 90 seconds or whatever it was. This is the fatal flaw of their team. They cannot defend. Crosby and Malkin and Carlson, still good players, still can do a lot offensively, but probably can't carry the team in the way that they were through their primes of their careers.
No, and Crosby's still amazing. Honestly, he's incredible. And anytime I watch him, I'm still mesmerized by how good he is. But he doesn't have the juice to be able to close guys down defensively. Mm-hmm. As much as he did in the past, while still being super productive on the offensive end.
Yeah.
And considering this team consistently is on the back heel and has to come back in games and has to fight and claw, they need his offensive play driving contribution, which I think takes away from some of the defensive stuff he can do because of his age. Like we saw even with Patrice Bergeron, how good he still was defensively. We saw shifts where he was just willing to take angles and take guys away and just do nothing.
Yeah.
Whereas Crosby always has to make an impact because they need to rely on him so much, which was different from a guy like Bergeron. But that's what Bergeron became. Like he killed guys on special teams. He was really good defensively, but sometimes not much happening offensively, just kind of great defensively, right? Whereas now with Crosby, he has to do everything. And I think that's just too much to ask from him right now.
On the ice for 21 goals against so far this season. The only forward who's been on for more is Carter Verhaeghe with the Florida Panthers. That at 5-on-5. So it's really interesting with this Pittsburgh team. We've talked about it in the past, how is this a realistic scenario where they can retool or something to that effect? It's going to be a very difficult road to navigate for Kyle Dubas, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like their chances, to be honest. Yeah. As far as, I don't like their chances of being able to give Crosby one more crack at it.
Yeah.
I think they can rebuild and maybe be a good team at some point. Obviously, Captain Obvious, at some point. I don't know what that some point is, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the odds of them being able to flip things around so quickly to give Crosby one more crack at it is next to impossible.
Yeah.
Their window to do it was the last offseason, not last year, the year before. This offseason, the year before. They had a ton of cap space. They had some trade capital. Mm-hmm. They had one shot of, let's do this on the fly, and it failed.
Yeah, and the big acquisition then was obviously Erik Karlsson. Ryan Graves was on that. That's been a big flop of a contract. They gave Tristan Jarry a big bag of money too, and he hasn't worked out as their top netminder, so it's been a lot of the big moves Kyle Dubas swung for did not work out for the Penguins. And, we keep getting messages, well, there's no way they can let Sid keep doing this. And, I get it to a certain extent, but look, he wouldn't have signed the extension if he was all that keen on playing elsewhere. Yeah. That's the thing I can't get around. Why sign an extension if wanted to play elsewhere?
100%.
Even willing to play elsewhere.
I don't disagree with that. I do think Friedman made a good point on the 32 Thoughts podcast talking about this, that realities can also change.
Right.
Like, do you get to a point now where you're like, I didn't expect this?
Yeah.
Hey, I thought we could do it, but maybe we can't. And now you see the enormity of the challenge.
Yeah.
And if you look at it from your cap situation too, you're like, this is going to be tough. Like, it's not an easy fix here. You have a bit of cap space this offseason, so you have a little bit of a chance, but is it enough to do a meaningful, you know? So does it change your perspective on things? He doesn't think he's there yet, but if this continues and their season gets worse by the end of it, could this offseason be a soul-searching offseason where it's like,
I don't know if I'm up for this.
And maybe the best, and then you get to a point where maybe he thinks the best way for him to actually help the organization is to be part of the solution in a trade.
Yeah.
Does he think of it that way at some point too, right? But I think that's far more realistic. That outcome reach, I think, is far more realistic than them turning it around and being a contender with Crosby.
Yeah. You're not wrong on that, right? It's because I just don't see a way back. They don't have a lot of trade assets. They, even as far as like unrestricted free agents go, like who are you moving off of this team? It's just, there's not a lot of options for them to gain, you know, assets to go out and acquire other things. They don't have cap space. The first step, as we saw with Jim Rutherford here in Vancouver, you got to unravel the cap situation.
Yeah.
And so like, that's what Kyle Dubas is trying to do now, but good luck. Like that takes at least a year. Maybe more,
yeah.
Given their contract situations.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, we got this text here about Pedersen saying, I feel like Petey's about to explode for a five-point game. Mm-hmm. The way the Pens play at some points, like,
yeah,
could Pedersen do that against them? And I think if those types of performances happen against them and they get blown out a few times, it's going to create a bit of an untenable situation.
Yeah.
And they have a great head coach in Mike Sullivan. No matter how good he is, at some point a situation becomes kind of toxic too. You lose a lot and you have to change something. And especially as you mentioned, you have a cap to unravel as well.
Yeah.
Does that come to a head at some point? I know he has a great relationship with the higher ups.
Mm-hmm.
But at some, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Losing changes everything.
Losing changes a lot of things.
We've seen this a lot in a lot of different situations. And the Pens are getting to that point, right, Reach? Like, they're not a team that's even made the playoffs in recent years. Like, they're missing playoffs in back-to-back years. Probably 3 years in a row. Like, that's no longer, hey, we're kind of in this.
Yeah.
It's first-round exits and missing the playoffs the last 5 years.
Oh, at this point, you know, you're getting to the stage where, like, come game 50 of the season, like, hey, hey Gino, do you have an injury that you'd like to just sit out the rest of the year? Maybe Erik Karlsson? You feel like taking the last 2 months off? Because we're in tank mode. And, you know, they're already 18 points from 23 games. They are the worst team in the National Hockey League. So... I guess Montreal is the only team with fewer points, but they've also played fewer games. So by points percentage, this is the worst team in the league.
They've been out of the first round since 2018.
Yeah, they're kind of like where Detroit was when they just kept, you know, well, even beyond where Detroit was, because once Detroit finally had their playoff streak end, they were like, okay, now we can tank.
Yeah.
But they wanted the playoff, like, whatever that meant to them, the 25 years or whatever, they wanted to keep the streak going.
Yeah.
And they kept that going as long as they could. And then they finally said, okay, now we're waving the white towel.
I think part of that honestly also comes down to you at that point when you're such a strong brand, you have so much corporate commitment and so many people that finance a team essentially because they're so committed to your brand. And to keep everybody satisfied, because as much as they're committed to the brand, if you start losing.
Yeah.
People are investors. Like, investors don't like making bad investments.
Yeah.
And that's why, right? So it's like, you know, you kind of have to be good. So I get it. Like, teams get to a point where they want to keep kind of the brand strong. And that means being in the playoffs. And that does matter from a brand value standpoint.
So one thing we had in the bag for yesterday's show that we weren't able to get to, and since Colby, it doesn't look like he's going to be able to join us here. Who are some players that have performed better for the Canucks then people are giving them credit for, and maybe who's not played so well? And, you know, when I obviously everybody is in love with what Kiefer Sherwood has given this team, right? You know, it's not hard to make the argument he was the best of the offseason acquisitions right there with Kevin Lankinen, and even his play has sort of petered off a little bit. But I feel like... I feel like Teddy Bluger doesn't get enough love from the fan base just to how valuable he is to the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, we're talking about a guy at 5-on-5 who's making $1.8 million, right? Leads the team in primary assists at 5-on-5. I know JT's missed a little bit of time. He usually, you know, leads this category. Maybe you think Quinn Hughes leads this category, but primary assists, Teddy Bluger leads the team in first assists. He's also got 3 goals now at 5-on-5 after scoring the other night against the Ottawa Senators. For a guy that is making relatively as little as he is and the value that he's brought since coming over as a free agent, I'm not sure Teddy Bluger gets the love he deserves.
Well, I think there's a few guys we're going to get to here, but they're all going to have something in common that they're all making under $2.5 million.
Yeah.
And you start stacking that together and you're getting guys, you know, making pretty minimal money by NHL standards, but producing at numbers that should yield $3 to $4 million salaries.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Well, it's the opposite. It's the opposite of what happened with the previous regime where they were paying a premium to bottom of the lineup players, giving them the $3 or $4 million, and it was crushing their cap situation. Whereas these guys, they're getting a lower amount of money and providing value to what they are getting.
Absolutely. Because right now, the way that Bluger's played, to me, he's a real legitimate third line center.
Yeah.
Like, I feel comfortable with him being a third line center, especially with Pugh Suter, who I also feel comfortable being a third line center.
Yeah.
And I think that's massive for two guys making under $2 million.
You have two guys that are interchangeable as kind of your third line center.
Yeah, and I think that's a real testament to what Bluger has done. To me, that's the biggest compliment I can pay him because
Or you even have a guy playing on your fourth line that's, you know, going to be able to win a lot of those matchups.
Yes. I would be careful, though, with Bluger because as much as I think he's great and we talk about a lot of things that he does well, I think he's pretty much getting to kind of the ceiling of what he is.
Because
you do see in certain situations where there is still a difference between him and higher caliber players. And that's why I still wonder, come the deadline, as much as I don't think the third line center is an issue, or you don't think the third line center is an issue, does the organization still want to have somebody of greater caliber that's capable of doing, say, what Lindholm did?
Yeah.
Because I don't think, as good as Bluger is, he is not capable of doing what Lindholm did.
No, Lindholm, different category of player.
Yeah, and even, right? So that's one thing I wonder about with him, but I'm 100% with you. Like, I think he's very underrated with how he helps make every line he's on better.
Yeah, and a penalty kill that, for the most part, has performed pretty well this year for the Vancouver Canucks, although they have had a little bit of struggles lately on the PK. I think I know where you're going to go with player that has performed better than maybe what people think, but why don't you tell us?
Well, Danton Heinen, I think he's a guy that every once in a while still gets criticized, and I love the criticism he gets. You're like, I don't even notice. What does he do? I'm like, perfect. Because like he does so many little things that nobody ever notices, and he does it so well. Like every line he's on, he does a great job facilitating play. He's always available along the boards. He goes in the right spots. He's good defensively. He's got a good stick. He knows how to get pucks off the board. And he just compliments players really well, right? Plus, he has a bottom line.
Yeah.
He's doing all those things, and he's producing a fair bit of points. I like to see him shoot a bit more sometimes. He has a good shot. I think that's something that we can see him do more of as far as scoring goals. But he's really great at making plays. How many times have you seen a goal happen and go back and watch from a line that he's on, and you see Heinen at some point making a key play, whether it's along the boards in his own end, whether it's chipping a puck out, or just making a simple play? He's always involved when a team scores a goal.
It's pretty remarkable how, like, such an understated player, so many of their qualities never really get noticed around the ice. But Heinen does a lot of those things. And it's simple fundamentals of the game that aren't always flashy, but it's always going to be a reason why it's hard for a coach to elevate Nils Höglander ahead of a Danton Heinen.
Yeah.
Or why Danton Heinen got the first look next to Miller and Besser coming out of training camp, because Rick Tocchet sees all these little things that he does well and hopes, hey, this guy can function as the third guy on this line to this already established duo that we have, and he can just help facilitate play for them. And that was ultimately the hope, but didn't work out at the start of the year. He's still been able to be productive for this team and valuable to this team in the role that he's had. And, you know, Bluger Heinen has, Bluger Heinen has kind of become the third line duo for this year.
Yeah, and we'll see with the game coming up here, but it looks like Bluger, Heinen, and Besser is going to be a line. And we saw
they can't split up the central line.
Not right now. Not really. They've just been too hot. They've been too good. Like we talked about, because we saw how good Heinen, Bluger, and Sherwood was, putting them together at some point is not an issue.
Yep.
And then if you put Besser with Pettersson at some point until Miller comes back, all of a sudden you look at the three lines and I think Suter, Bluger, and Joshua is a pretty good line, right? And even if you have Heinen, Bluger, and Sherwood, that means your top line has Besser and Pettersson, which is, I mean, that's an elite duo, right? And then your fourth line, you have Hoglander and Ratu and whoever you want to put as the next guy, which is a fair fourth line because it has a guy like Hoglander who can drive that line. So even with JT Miller out, and this is where the versatility of the Canucks roster comes in, and that's why, you know, a guy like Pugh Suter is also a guy who probably doesn't get as much credit, making $1.66 million. I know he's been getting some love, especially earlier this year when he scored some goals and did some things, but you see the versatility he provides. He can go from playing top six winger, helping JT Miller and Besser be a great line, to now with a key injury, he moves down and he plays as a second line center right now. For the moment, he's a second line center behind Pettersson, playing with Garland and Joshua. The fact he can provide that at $1.6 million is massive.
He's the Swiss Army knife because he's Swiss, right? Because he's Swiss. Yeah.
He's Swiss.
On the flip side, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, but the obvious answer is Nils Höglander. Has he been the most disappointing player to start the season? He's among them.
He is. And it's unfortunate, right? Because, you know, we all wanted to see him grow. And we all like the contract extension.
Yeah.
Even if he has a 15-goal year, $3 million for a guy like him that can drive a line down your lineup, it's fair. It's fine. And if he's actually more, he can be a bargain.
Especially with the cap projected to go up as much as it is.
But right now, he's showing the low end of it. And I think he's a player that we kind of have to expect this from. We've seen players like this kind of go through the league, right? Whether it's a guy like Michael Grabner.
Yeah.
Right? And there's Anthony Duclair is another guy. These are guys who have real good talent, real good skill, and they help a team. But they also have moments when they don't.
Yeah.
And they're going to have those ups and downs throughout a season. And when they're going, they're great. When they're not, but that's kind of what you have to live with. And you may have to just live with Höglander being that guy. Mm-hmm. So right now, I'd be careful with like, oh, this guy's terrible. He's never going to figure it out. I think he's going to swing back up and have a real nice spell for the team again. But that might just be what Höglander is. And I think that is somewhat disappointing, right? Because you're hoping for more consistency this year.
It is Canucks Central, Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. The Canucks and Bruins are coming up. Jovan on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox asking, do we know what line Besser will be on? Via Ian McIntyre, he mentioned that Besser was skating on a line with Bluger and Heinen. So as the Canucks get Besser back into the lineup, maybe they ease him into a lower spot. And also while the central line, we didn't personally name that. Our listeners, especially Austin and Langley, is all over it. The central line with Pettersson, DeBrusk, and Sherwood will remain together as the top line. We'll get to more of your texts. We'll get into more of the game storylines. Revenge game storylines abound in this one against the Boston Bruins. We'll join up with Brendan Batchelor and Randeep Janda, the pregame roundtable. It's all coming up. Canucks and Bruins next on Sportsnet 650.